Let's start with the prayers and remember their meaning. Those of you who like to read the English translation while we are singing in Tibetan, please feel free to do so. Sangye Chedan Sagye Chodnam Lan Chanjom Bado Dani Kapsun Chi Dagi Jin Son Chin Pesanam Ji Dola Penji Sangye Jom Pai Sho Sangye Chedan Sangye Chonam La Chancho Padu Dani Kapsunchi Dagin Chin Soin Chin Pesanam Chi Dron Lam Pen Chi Sang Yin Chom Pai Cho Sang Yin Chin Dan Sang Yin Chonam La Janjom Padu Dani Kapsunji Dagi Jin Soin Chin Pesanam Ji Dron Lam Pen Chia Sang Yin Jom Pai Sho Sem Chen Tam Jen De Wan Dan De Vin Yun Dan Dem Pan Chuan Jing Dun Nen Dan Dun Nen Jin Jun Dan De Wan Chuan Jing Dun Nen Min Pen De Wan Dham Pan Dham Hin De Wan Chuan Jing Nyed in chan dan ni dan dry wen chan nam chem po la nem pan chuan jik. Sem chan tam jen de wa dan de wen yu dan dem pan chuan jik. Dun nen dan dun hen jin ju dan de wan chuan jik. Dunne mem pen de wan dam pen dam in de wan Nidin chandan idan dravitandam champula nipachuji sam chantam jadheva dandevi judandam pachuji dunadan dunaji judandava chuji Dunamibhadeva dhampadam indra vajraji Nidin chandan hidandra vitannam champula nipajraji Padan savelamadimpoji Dagechi vampeden henshula Kajin shempegone jesunti Kusun toking adron saldusa And already with the first in-breath after the prayer, we are back into practice, we continue practice. And we breathe with that special softness of the four limitless qualities. And I cannot help myself but think of the fleas that have tried to come in here. They have definitely come in here. And it was not light-hearted that we had to end their life. And so I'm thinking of them, these little creatures. A few thoughts. Our breath transforming into a prayer for their well-being. There was no good other choice. And I remember the times of the Buddha when he decided after the rainy season had started to always stop walking when the rainy season starts, so as not to harm the small creatures in the ground, in the earth. Deep respect for every little creature. And of course, we extend our awareness, breathing in and breathing out, with this warm-hearted, loving, compassionate attitude. And again, we start with ourselves. Although we have such a soft heart, you know, figuratively speaking, although we are so sensitive, then often we don't use that sensitivity. And when we use the meditation to loosen up that hardness, that protection that has formed in our heart, mind, it's a little bit like washing a salt crystal. It's very gentle in-breath and out-breath. We are washing the structures that have hardened, the protections, the fears. Gently surrounding our own little protections with the nectar of awareness, of a loving awareness, symbolized by light, sometimes symbolized also by nectar-like, white, amrita, as if we could drink the awareness of awakening. Breathing in, breathing out, giving ourselves space, a lot of space. And you know, the salt of our protection actually just becomes one with the water, with the nectar. And it gives to our awareness the special taste of humanness. We know the fears, we know the sorrows, we know the suffering, and yet it is entering something much larger, something much wider. this whole body being filled with this nectar, light, flowing in and flowing out. Flowing all around us, all around our body, as if we were receiving a shower from above. A shower coming straight from the Buddhas. Breathing it in, feeling it entering everywhere, flowing through us, and we gently go with the flow. We become this flow. Actually, we are beginning to meditate on the flowing nature of awareness. We are helped by the flow of breathing in and breathing out. We are helped by the flowing nature of our body, the body with the many small oscillations, there's many, many small movements there all the time. And we allow for them. It's that fluidity of our own being. The essential instructions on how to meditate are very simple in Mahamudra. It's actually not involving with the past. First instruction. Well, that means if something that has to do with the last second or the last year or my whole life, which is past, anything pops up like that, let it flow. Don't get involved. Just notice it and let it flow. And there is so much connected to the past. Wow, just imagine that the nectar flowing through the crown of our head like a shower. That it has taken all these identifications into the flow, that we are like newborn, like we come out of the shower. Like newborn, fresh. And then the next thing we might want to do is to plan the future, but this also the shower takes away. So let's remain newborn, fresh, without making plans, no projects. Just so, in the continuous flow of awareness, that awareness which is always there, we don't have to create it. Feel this completely loose, breathing in and breathing out with this loving, compassionate, joyful, equanimous attitude. The joy is the lightness, the joy and joy. Enjoys every moment of awareness, of being alive, and of being free. And then it says in these instructions also not to solidify the present, not to think about the now. Just living it, just being this freshness, this experience of the now. Awareness flowing, life flowing, maybe not flowing in one direction, but flowing in all directions, more like vibrating, undulating, often we use the metaphor of a tree to speak about meditation. But when it comes to this flowing quality, then it's maybe more like a stalk of grass, soft grass in the wind. And when the storm comes, it's so flexible, it can be to the ground, very soft, the storm is over, and it straightens up again. Something like this, very soft, very flexible, offering no resistance, yet having its own life. There is a saying, the harder the world is around you, the softer you need to become. This is the quality of water which can flow around the hardness, or the quality of grass which gives in to the storm and remains after the storm. And the special fluidity which we talk about here is a fluidity of allowing this timeless awareness to flow through us, the bodhicitta nectar, the nectar of awakened mind, to flow through every cell, to dissolve all the knots, the crystalline structures, everything that blocks the nadis, the subtle energy channels, which blocks the mind, opening to bodhicitta everywhere. And when we open like this to the flow, we encounter a natural purity, an innate purity. You can also call it simplicity. That purity that we were born with, or you can say that was our basic nature already when we were born. In this simple being, there's also complete innocence. When we are in that simplicity, one with this flowing nature of life, then there is this natural innocence which is there. Let me explain a little what we have been doing Yesterday, you remember certainly, we were entering the four immeasurables. Yeah, the love, compassion, joy, equanimity. I was talking about the elephant in the room, but there is many elephants in the room. Doesn't matter. What we have been doing is approaching from the four immeasurables, the bodhicitta, going into the fluidity of the mind. And I gave you the three first instructions of the so-called six dharmas of Tilopa, not Naropa, Tilopa. Not to reflect about the past, not to project into the future, and not to conceptualize the present. Three simple instructions, right? Basically, not to be preoccupied with the three times, past, future, and present. To make our mind free, yeah, to make it free to completely live without conceptualizing our experience and to be free of all that which we bring with us from the past that will definitely pop up in meditation. To be free from all that what we project in the future, what I might be, what will happen next minute, next day, next year, in all of the projections to the future, also a major fortress of the self. And then what's left is the now. And then, of course, the meditator starts to think about the now. Yes, and that also the present doesn't need any comments. So basically that would be it, if we could do it. Then there come two more instructions which I didn't say. One is, do not analyze. The next one is the fourth one. Do not analyze. Means, do not analyze whether your experience is empty now, whether it is non-dual now, whether it is like fitting to your ideas of how you should meditate. And that's the fifth instruction. Don't meditate. Yes? So don't analyze, don't meditate. Number four and number five. You get them? You get all five so far? That is the sixth one. That's the only positive one. Leave the mind natural. Leave the mind as it is. Yeah? So these famous six dharmas of Tilopa, they are the basic understanding of how we enter practice in this tradition, in this Mahamudra tradition. And it all has to do with entering a flow, a flowing experience of just now. And in this flow, we do encounter resistances. We do encounter hang-ups, thoughts, grasping. Yeah? And every time we encourage the flow to happen. And the breathing can help. Yeah, breathing in, breathing out. If we do it with the four immeasurables, then, wow, have so much to see the nature of what pops up, to have no substance, and the possibility to just offer ourselves with the next out-breath already to offer ourselves freedom. Wow. Can be free from all these preoccupations. All of that, all these preoccupations. We allow them to flow. And I told you in meditation, it all happened spontaneously. Don't think I prepared it. It happened by itself. But now I can remember still what I said. So we often compare our meditation with a tree, right? Well-rooted, open above, yeah, with all that. But the image of flexibility, you know, trees, they break so easily in a storm. Yes? Especially when they get old. Now, we have already grown old, to some of us at least. Yes? And we build up so many beliefs, so many ideas of how I should be and what is wrong and what is right. And our tendency would be, when there are stormy times, like now, the stormy times in this country, yeah, and then the normal reaction would be hard times, I also become hard, yes, I toughen up. I close my heart a little more, I protect myself a little bit more. I don't want to think about this little fleece that had to leave the meditation hall, you know. It's not worth it when so many people are killed. Yeah, why should I think about fleas? Yeah, it's like the hardening of the heart is so strong that the little things of daily life almost don't touch us anymore. So that's an obstacle. That's an obstacle for our practice. And actually, yes, when I gave the example of the Tibetans, to keep the heart, that means the heart-mind, to keep that fluid, to keep it flexible, to make it soft when there is hardness in front. And it's from Tibetan teachers that I have this example with the water, you know, becoming like water. Water can be hard when you bump into a hard wave, can be hard, but actually it has the capacity to connect and to flow around, and it can flow around every obstacle. And out in nature, instead of being a tree in a storm, it's much better to be a stalk of grass, right? Soft grass, bending to the ground, and coming up again. Yeah, it's like these are images only. These are images that talk to us about the quality of the mind that is not to harden up when the situation around becomes tough. Yeah, it's like the toughness of what is asked of us, then usually we react with a hardening. Now, opening up just like that is not such a good thing, because we might be hurt, right? So what makes the fluidity is the wisdom. That's what makes the fluidity. It's not more love, more compassion. Actually, it's the wisdom that allows to be a little bit more compassionate, to feel a little bit more. Now, this wisdom is to see the nature of the experiences, to actually be able to feel that all of this can pop up and has no capacity to do harm. So we need to see the harmless nature of whatever arises in mind. That's a big step. The harmless nature of what pops up. Yeah, yeah, exactly. That which pops up cannot do any harm to mind as such, you know, as if we would say that the planes going through space, that they could harm space, or the birds flying through, or whatever flies through, you know, these satellites, you know, they can't harm space. It's not possible. And our mind has no substance. Okay, so this wisdom that understands that mind has no substance, and that awareness is not a thing, awareness cannot be harmed, and that which pops up is also of the same nature as mind, same awareness. You know, actually it's just waves in the water. The waves in the water do not harm the water. Okay? It's formations in the mind, and the mind itself and the formations are of one nature. This deep understanding, then we are not afraid of whatever pops up in our sensitive opening, flowing heart. Yeah, like this. So only when this wisdom is there and this deep understanding that nothing can harm our basic nature, then we can open up again or open up more. But it is really, I can see that the closing and opening of hearts depends very much on the intensity of one's wisdom. Yeah, the intensity of one's understanding of mind's nature. When we begin to understand that although we can wake up from a nightmare in sweat and screaming and so on, but the moment we understand it was just happening in mind, what a relief. Yes, what a relief. And this is a good example of how we are hardening and reacting with all our normal reactions. And then what insight means. It's the relief from waking up from a sleep that we spent in ignorance. So in order to help that happen, there is a Mahamudra preliminary. And we were already practicing a little bit of that without me mentioning much of it. It's called the Vajrasattva practice. You know, the practice of the 100 syllables. You might not have never heard anything of this. So I will explain. We are not necessarily doing it, but we need to develop the qualities. Okay? But it's time for a break. So it's like when the publicity comes in a good film, right? Okay. It's time for a break. So let's meet again in 20 minutes and I will continue after the break explaining you the second preliminary, because the first I've explained to you already. That was the refuge and bodhicitta. Huh? And we will continue now with the second one. So 20 minutes is enough. Is that okay? Yeah. Then meet you again in 20 minutes. Of the preliminaries of Mahamudra. We're actually already in the main practice, but the preliminaries, they make us enter the main practice. So don't be worried. We are not just doing beginner stuff. No, no, the preliminaries are the main practice. I talked several times, I mentioned, and I think I taught them a little bit more last retreat, about the four common preliminaries. These are called the four thoughts or four contemplations which turn the mind to the Dharma. Yeah? They're also sometimes just called the four mind turners. Yeah. Turn the mind away from our ordinary perception to an awareness of what is most important in life. We did them sometimes in the morning. Remember the first one was with gratitude, contemplating how precious this human existence is. Yeah, this is the title is Precious Human Body. But actually it means how precious it is when in this human existence all the conditions come together to practice the Dharma. Or there can be an elaborate teaching on this. And some Tibetan teachers would spend several days on that. Yeah, it's like it's deep stuff. Yeah, but it is for us, it is the starting the day with a deep appreciation. Okay, one more day to practice. And then comes the second contemplation, impermanence. We have had that too. Meaning here in that context that we don't know how long this precious opportunity will last. We really don't know how much time we have. Yeah? It's very precious here. But then something can happen, and so much turbulence in our life that we have no more freedom to listen to the Dharma, to contemplate it, to sit in a quiet place, you know. Or we might even have left this life, you know. It's like we might have died. So this second contemplation involves a sense of urgency, that it is urgent to practice, that we just can't be sure that we will be having enough time to reach that liberating insight in this possibly very short life. Anyhow, it's only going to be somewhere, even if we live long, a little bit more than 100 years. And in that time, if we live long. But whether I am still alive next week, I don't know. No one can sign a contract that this is for sure. Yeah, no one. So, gratitude, urgency. And then comes clarity of action. This is called karma. The third contemplation is on the cause, which is the causes for what I experience is the way I think, the way I speak, the way I act with the body. That creates the cause for what experiences will arise in my life. The effect of my actions with, especially with the mind. So in the Buddhist teaching, you're very aware, then mental action is understood to precede verbal action and to precede physical action. Yeah? So the way we think, the way we interpret reality, what we, you know, the way the emotions influence our thinking, all that is incredibly important in shaping our life now and in the future. So with this sense of gratitude, with this sense of urgency, we know, okay, I really want to take care of my actions today. The way I think, the way I speak, the way I act. I want to really stay out of what is unwholesome, of what harms. That is clear. And I want to cultivate that which is wholesome and that which opens the heart mind. That is the third, and you can make it very detailed again. Yeah, you can go through very detailed way. What actually you want to abandon, what you want to concentrate on and developing, what you want to cultivate, you know, can be very precise. And the fourth is called contemplating the shortcomings of samsara. Now, why would one need to contemplate the shortcomings of samsara? Because this word is already such a heavy connotation of not being good. But actually, what is called samsara is what we are doing most of the time. We are defending our friends, attacking enemies. We are taking care of our own needs first before taking care of the needs of others. We are in such a, we are taken in by a search for happiness that looks in the wrong place. That's the motto of samsara. A search for happiness looking in the wrong place. Thinking that I can become happier if I serve my own goals. If I make myself most important, that will be the best way to become happy. Now the Dharma says the opposite. If you serve everyone's happiness, your own happiness will be served automatically. And from the point of view of Dharma, our world is upside down. Everything here is completely wrong. Yes, this whole profit-oriented society with no respect for nature, you can make some laws which kind of want to channelize that a little bit, yeah, to make it less harmful. But they are broken all the time. They are diluted as soon as profit goes down. Hey, come on. We see our society eating up its own resources on this planet. We see that. And when I say society, I mean the planetary society. Yeah, we can see that. Okay? It's happening. And we see that this self-centeredness is creating so much harm. So many quarrels, so many wars, so many, this identification, me, us, my family, my ethnic group, and so on. We have seen that with every country. And the Germans, they are on top of the list, It's no exception. Yeah, I've had a father who has killed. And it was a burden for him all his life. So, world upside down, already influenced as a young boy, indoctrinated, everything upside down, wrong goals in life. Wrong goals, yes. And this is, to speak clearly, the view of the Dharma is that this world is upside down. And fortunately, not everywhere. Fortunately, in between what we do, there is so much love and compassion. It's incredible what we hear about what's happening in the difficult zones, how people help each other, how much reaching out to each other is, how much they're taking each other by the hands, how they won't let someone just in, without food and water and so on. They will take care and they will share. So there is so much where the world is also on its feet, so to speak, upside up. Yes? Yeah, you see, so it's not only like this, but this where our heart and our body, speech, mind, actions, they flow towards the wholesome. You say, this is the uplifting energy in the world. Yeah, this is where really there is respect, and then we don't search only for our own happiness. We turn towards the happiness of all. And this fourth contemplation becomes deeper because we contemplate, well, it's good to have water, food, a shelter, safe surroundings, medical care, all of that is good. But it doesn't mean that the person is happy. Sometimes the richest are the unhappiest. Yeah, it's like not always, but sometimes. Always, when do we really become happy? So the fourth contemplation is, today, I will go towards what really makes happy. And you decide for yourself. Of course, there are Dharma answers. There are Dharma answers that if you can go into that open mind, if you can live in bodhicitta and so on, then you will encounter true happiness. Yeah? The state of liberation is called true happiness. But there is other happinesses like the happiness to serve others, the happiness to take a dog for a walk, the happiness to give water to the birds, you have so much, you go with what makes happy and creates no harm. Yeah. So you go towards all these actions and today is the day. So these four contemplations, they're like 24-hour resolutions, like every morning we renew them. Like in the Alcoholics Anonymous, we are the Samsaric Anonymous. Yeah, and we have been dry maybe for a few hours. But, so every morning we go through and we take the resolve again. Today, as little samsara as possible. Yeah, as much going towards true happiness as possible. And with that, then we turn towards the refuge and we develop bodhicitta. Refuge, Buddha Dhamma Sangha. Bodhicitta means limitless love, compassion, joy, equanimity for all beings, limitless in number, limitless in time. Just not putting limits on our path of awakening. So that is the first specific preliminary. Yeah, the special preliminary of the Mahamudra starts with this intense practice of refuge and bodhicitta. And now we come to the second preliminary, which is already a complete practice in itself. Like every practice is actually complete in itself. And this is connecting to a white Buddha this time. Yeah, they change colors, you know, but yeah, it's like, could be any color, but white, you know, white is the typical color of purity, right? And here, the preparation for Mahamudra is to be able to connect with the purity of our own heart mind, because it is pure. It is so pure, deep inside. Even if we have done the whole list of unwholesome acts, you know? And there have been examples from the Buddha's life, you know, like the former prince and then king Ajatasattu, who killed his own father Bimbisara in order to get on the throne, and then regretted, and then, you know, as a murderer, actually entered the path and developed an incredible devotion to the Buddha. So much so that he is said to have thrown himself down from the roof of his palace, knowing that the Buddha is there and will be able to catch him, right? Just legend, but I don't know. But these kind of, he did several times, he tested the Buddha whether he was really helping him. And like, there's so many examples of people that have lied, that have cheated, that have, you know, just think of this emperor Ashoka. You have heard about Ashoka? Yeah, this emperor, 100 years after the Buddha's parinirvana, there was an incredible dictator in India who was so rough. He went with his armies everywhere, and he made so many wars. He won all the wars. And the last big success from his point of view was a big battle in Orissa, 100,000 dead in a few days. And he won, and he walked through the battlefield. And, you know, in those times it was still with real arms, you know, not shooting at each other, but he could see the blood. He saw the beheaded people. He was walking through. He was now the king of whole of India. There was nothing, nobody left to resist him. And in the battlefield, he encounters an arhat. I've forgotten the name, but the name is known. And this arhat, which means a fully awakened being, a fully liberated practitioner, this arhat talks to Ashoka at the moment where he is on the peak of his cruel success. And the heart of Ashoka opens, and he becomes the example of ahimsa, of nonviolence. Okay? He was responsible not only for those 100,000 deaths, he was responsible for so many wars before. Yeah? He became the one who erected these pillars in India, which you can still see today, with the inscriptions, please pay respect to every insect, please respect each other. In our kingdom, all different beliefs are welcome, please. Yeah, and like this. Yeah, he makes like these inscriptions. And you can still read them today, because he put them into stone and he made these massive pillars at the crossroads where people would walk, so that everyone was able to read these inscriptions, which were the edicts of this Emperor Ashoka, of whom everyone speaks very highly nowadays. He's like the Buddhist king, you know, but how he started his career, yeah, we don't want to get into details there. Yeah? So Why am I saying this? This is because this man, as well as many others I could quote, has never lost the purity of his mind. With whatever pride and anger and hatred there was, and you know, with all the cruelties that he was with, never the purity of the nature of mind was changed. And now we all have on our consciousness, on our conscience, I should say, we have feelings of not having done good all the time in our life. We are blocked by that. And we are carrying this with us, that we have been lying, we have been cheating, we have been trying to hide our little stories, we have been killing insects en masse, maybe whatever. We have been doing this and that, and we don't even know the reasons every time why we have been behaving like this. And we have been, of course, all of us, very ego-centered. So a lot of time the I was more important than the we. Yeah, many times in our life. And to clear that out of the way is the second preliminary. This is like why we put a white Buddha on top of our head. It's Buddha Vajrasattva. And he has appeared in so many visions. Vajrasattva has appeared and gave the teaching about the innate purity of every sentient being, and that all these karmic layers of, of clinging to self-importance, let's put it together like this, with the fear, with the feelings of guilt, with self-importance, all of that, once that is cleared away, then the purity will naturally appear. So the Buddha mind, the Buddha nature will naturally appear once all these layers have been cleared away. Now, what is making these layers stay? Why is it that our consciousness is veiled by that which is happening? The answer is always the same in the Dharma. It's always the same. Because of clinging, grasping, we identify. There are traces, you just can't get rid of these memories, this impact. All of that has made our heart tighten up. That is, all of this is somehow me. Even if I don't behave like this anymore, I still feel, I have this load. I have this karmic baggage. Yeah, I have this karmic load with me. I'm carrying that. I have my identifications with me. I have my, all of that. So the Vajrasattva practice is one, basically, to go to the enlightened laundry shop. Yeah, we go into the washing machine. Now, the washing machine is actually very simple. It's like a shower. We had a little bit of that in the guided meditation. A little bit, yes? So, from Vajrasattva in the heart of Vajrasattva, sitting on top of our head, then we do the prayer. And this prayer turns in the heart of Vajrasattva, turns around and stimulates that awakened awareness, that bodhicitta of the Buddha is stimulated, and this bodhicitta takes on the form of a nectar of light which flows out his big toe. It has to come out somewhere, Like the shower has an opening, so here he's sitting above us, and his body becomes completely overfilled with this nectar, and it has to leave somewhere, and it leaves as strongly. We imagine, I love this as a German person, and when you pull the plug of a barrel of beer, Yeah, like in the on the Oktoberfest, you know? And this is written in the Tibetan texts. It's wonderful. I love this passage. So it comes out with so much force, yeah. And it is just flowing into our Brahmanic opening up here, flowing through, and wherever there is a holding on, wherever there are resistances, wherever there is an identification, how it flows through. And we then purposely think of all the misdeeds we have done. We think of all the emotions that have guided our actions. You know, we think back until our childhood and until now again, you know, what all I have done out of pride. And the more I think of it, the more I remember. Terrible. But there's always the bodhicitta nectar. And then what I have done out of anger, what I have done out of fear, what I have done out of obedience, of listening to people who were telling me to do things. You know, all of whatever the reasons are, constant flow of bodhicitta, which means the quality of the four limitless ones, the four immeasurables, love, compassion, joy, equanimity. That's constantly like going through my awareness body everywhere. And we imagine that it comes out from all the pores of the skin, from the lower orifices, and goes into the golden ground. The golden ground is actually the nature of mind. It just dissolves there. Yeah, there is no need because it has no substance. But for us, it is like the core of identity. So just imagine, for me, I was a Vipassana practitioner. I did this body scan. I was very often, I was very able to do this body scan. Yeah, I was like flowing through, and you know, this discussion whether it is like a shower or not, and you know, like, now flowing, so I was very much aware with this, and I had learned the Vajrasattva mantra on a different occasion. I will not tell the story. So I knew the Vajrasattva mantra. And then it was my birthday. It was, I think, my 25th birthday. And my wife had a dream that night that now is the time to show me the Vajrasattva practice. Yeah, she was told in her dream that now it's time, and she sat down and said, in the morning, we were having the birthday morning and so on, and she said, you know, I had this strange dream. I know you don't like that too much, but I know you know the mantra, you have received the initiation, the empowerment by Kalu Rinpoche, and I was told to offer you this Vajrasattva practice. I had everything needed, but I wasn't practicing it, because I was only doing silent meditation. And then she made me this guided visualization with this Buddha, the mantra garland. We were reciting the mantra, and I was visualizing the nectar. And I understood, but this is the supreme body scan. This is the supreme bodhicitta body scan. Wow! Instead of going through the organism, the body, with normal awareness, You let it happen, you're not doing it by your own self, but you let it happen through the blessing of the Buddha. You let it flow through, and wherever you go, wherever you feel the slightest tension, the slightest identification, just you go into that trust that all of this is washed out. And then at the end, you sit in your total innocence and your total purity. For me, this first time I was doing it was so overwhelming. I did the whole process. She guided me and so on. I was so filled with blessing. I remember I fell on my back. I just let everything go. I was lying on the carpet like this. I was only like blissed out. That's how strong it was. But my mind was well prepared by all this Vipassana practice, right? But it was like a supreme form of doing the Vipassana practice, the body scan Vipassana practice, because it was connecting the undistracted awareness of body scan with opening to blessing and remembering all the shortcomings, and then opening up to the complete letting go of all these shortcomings, of all these hindrances, and then the encouragement, and finally the pores of the skin, they close, everything closes, and the bodhicitta of the Buddha, not my own produced bodhicitta, the bodhicitta of the Buddha stays in me, reaches the top of the head, and overflows, and overflows, and I'm inside, outside, only Buddha mind. Yeah, and it is so overwhelming and such an incredible preparation for Mahamudra practice, because then with that you remove the very important obstacle of clinging to your past, the past deeds, the past actions, the past thoughts, you know, clinging to whatever tightens the heart, you know, all of that is like crystalline structures which are being washed out. One can visualize them. There is more details, you know, one can visualize all of what is leaving us. But the details are not important. To understand that opening into that complete innocence, that purity of mind as it always was. And then Gendo Rinpoche, when later on I did the Vajrasattva practice a second time, you know, again, you do 111,000, and then doing it a second time, and then he said, you know, just one mala, 108 pearls, with full devotion and full opening, and you can experience that innate purity, because it's always there. Just go with it for 20 minutes, half an hour in full intensity, and then sit in that. And that's the beginning of Mahamudra practice. Then sitting in that fluidity and innocence, purity, you know, of the ordinary mind. Yes. That is then yet another introduction into Mahamudra. Okay, that was the explanation. Yeah? Now, I don't think I can produce that with you, but we will meditate a little bit in silence and see what happens, and then we make a pause, and then we continue again. I think after all of what I said, you can sit straight away in the innate purity. Just letting go of all those identifications and allowing the blessings of the Buddhas to enter you. when ordinary thoughts arise, just remember your basic purity. And if you need some support, let the flow of nectar light just wash whatever clinging is there, whatever thoughts are there. Let's just the nectar wash it away. We meet again at 12 o'clock, which is a little bit more than 20 minutes pause. After all these years of practice, we can still appreciate the breath flowing in and flowing out. What a gift of life. And you might have well noticed that actually we are not watching the breath. What's actually happening? The deeper we go with the practice, we are actually shifting the focus from the mere sensations of breathing, for example, at the nostrils. We go into the feelings of opening up. and of the feelings of letting flow, allowing for the flow. We begin to meditate on the nature of the mind as we are breathing in and breathing out. The nature of experience, the nature of life. We already have some experience of our mind being spacious. And there is this spacious awareness experiencing breathing in, breathing out. We also know how dynamic our mind is. And here we find in the breathing dynamic space. Widening, contracting. Opening, flowing. When we focus on the details of the breathing experience, it's just as when the mind is focusing on any thought, any sense object. You might be focusing on the sensations in our chest. The rib cage lifting, raising, sinking back, expanding, contracting. We might be focusing on a tiny space where we can feel a change. Maybe our shirt sliding across the skin at a place. And at the same time, be aware that this is simply movements in space. We also know that our mind is continuous. Awareness, consciousness flows through all the different situations. And here we are, breathing in, breathing out. Breathing itself is continuous. And even if there are pauses, we can see that in those pauses, simply the next in-breath, the next out-breath prepares. Just like the mind. Sometimes being less active, or even seemingly inactive, just a vibrating awareness, ready for the next movements. Spacious, dynamic, continuous awareness. And we know also that mind is ungraspable. Just as all these mental phenomena cannot be grasped, they are not solid. And as we experience the breathing, that it is, this ungraspable nature. We can't even grasp one single breath. Just flowing experience, movement, space. The breathing experience as such, ungraspable mind. And again, in this ungraspable experience of breathing, there is so much precision, there are so many details that we can perceive, that we can differentiate. So fine. And all of these perceived details, they all liberate themselves, they all change into the next experience. They might repeat themselves in similar forms, if the conditions are there. Same with our thinking, very fine, very precise. And a similar thinking, a similar experience might repeat itself if the conditions are there. And perhaps you get a feeling that this is the breathing of a perfect Buddha mind. Everything is there. Nothing needs to be added. Nothing has to be different. And then we just trust that. Let us dedicate the morning together. You know, there's this little paper with these prayers. We can use it or leave it. Sanam de ye tam jesi pani tam ne ne pe janam pam jene kenga na chim palam jom paye se pe sol he do va je va so Jampem pavajita kempadam kanto zampo de yande shinte denda kanje jesu da longjing gewan de datam jedam tumu Sang ye kusum ne penjen lam dan chen em enjoyed em penjen lam dan Gendun me jed em penjen lam jin jin dang o wam en lam drum pa